You can change the world, it's your choice. One mic, one voice. You can change the world, it's your choice. One mic, one voice. You can change the world, it's your choice. One mic, one voice.
Welcome to the One Mic, One Voice show, Building the Collective Conscious, a show that is created to give space where your voice, ideas, and informed opinions can be heard, appreciated, and yay, debated. I am Michael Eric Owens.
And I'm Deshaun Thornton, along with my giant-sized friend here, Michael Eric Owens. Man, it feels good to hear your voice again, man. On the mic, back in the studio.
Likewise,
man. Just finished a long stint.
Maybe recovery.
You ready to get those kinks out the back?
Trip, you know, man. Today, folks, we have an exciting show. The title is The Road Trip. So we're going to talk about our recent broadcasts, which will be coming out. We'll be releasing them this week. We did 5 shows in 3 days. Isn't that amazing?
It is pretty amazing. We had a lot of stuff to do. We were on a really tight schedule. We just kind of went out there and did that. I mean, Richard did an excellent job.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Taking
as
the show
always.
On the go.
as always. And, folks, we're going to get into that, into the dynamics of going to the Midwest and being in Chicago as well as Milwaukee and Kenosha, Wisconsin. And we just had a great time. And we took a little reprieve to recuperate. Right. And now we feel I'm full strength now.
Yeah, me too. Me too.
Okay, you back focused.
Yes, sir.
Because we got a lot of things going on, man. We're approaching our 100th show. And that's an exciting time. So we're looking forward to probably, again, taking the show outside of the studio to get out with some of our listeners. And 100 is a celebration.
Yeah, you know, Richard's in connection with some of the biggest venue here in Oklahoma City. So I know we're going to have like a ballroom set up.
Is that what it is?
He's going to pull out all the stops, right?
Okay, Richard,
quiet. I'm gonna have a little thumbs up.
I'm gonna have to have a bow tie on or something like that.
Yeah, it's gonna be very, very classy, very formal, very, very grown and sexy, as they say.
Grown and sexy, man. So talk a little bit about, before we get into today's show, what you've been up to, man.
Well, let me say first that when we first came back from Milwaukee, I did suffer some.
That's right, you were under the weather.
Sickness, right? Mm-hmm. I was like all congested or whatever. So I'm back. I'm bouncing back from that.
Sound good?
Oh, thank you. I've been working on it,
right?
La 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 and all that, you know. But man, otherwise, you know, just getting ready for this next season that we're going into. It's getting cold outside.
Yeah.
Just work it, man. Feet to the ground, working with the students, working with you, of course.
Absolutely.
Just trying to get some things done, man. Look at the year and see what has been accomplished and what still has yet to be done.
Because we're coming to the close. I mean, we're about to hit this week. We're gonna hit November. Can you believe that? November, man.
November, exactly.
Oh, man, it's crazy. Where did 2017 go? We about to walk into 1-8.
1-8.
You know, and really, I think it's been a great year. Of course, as we go further on in November and December, we will reflect upon the year. But I think, man, it's been exciting, the things we have been involved with. And folks, we're going to get back on the 45 here coming up soon.
I was kind of hoping.
We're not going to do that today.
Okay.
No, we're not going to do that today. But what we're going to do, though, we're going to take a break. And also coming up on this, we're going to reflect the first half of the show. And then we're going to bring in a good friend of mine, Jeremiah Davis from the Oklahoma Contemporary Arts to talk about this hip hop man event that they have coming up in Oklahoma City along with Angel Little. So we're looking forward to kind of hearing about that and you know, getting our listeners out there as well and getting that information out. So they're going to be coming up toward the last half of the show. But folks, we're going to take a break. We're going to get into this Midwest trip, man, that we that we were fortunate enough to take. So folks, listen, hang in there, and we will be right back.
This is Josh K.
And I am Leah Marie.
And when we listen to podcasts, we always listen to
One Mic, One Voice. You can change the world, it's your choice.
Your choice.
This is Elijah Bailey.
This is Richard Taplin.
From the Elijah Bailey Show, bringing you all the content that you could ever desire about anime, manga, comic books, martial arts, fitness, and more.
You can find us at Elijah Bailey Show on the official Facebook page and also Elijah Bailey Show without the W on Twitter and Instagram.
Make sure to follow, subscribe, like, comment, and rate on iTunes and Podbean.
All right, welcome back, folks. We're going to get into this thing, this Midwest trip that we made. And first of all, you know, on One Mic, One Voice, we've had the opportunity to locally get out at universities, in classrooms, to have conversations with students. And we wanted to extend that beyond Oklahoma City. And so we had the opportunity to travel to Milwaukee, Wisconsin.
Back to your old stomping ground.
Man, back to my old stomping ground. And I'm going to ask Richard to join in this conversation with us because he was intimately involved on this trip with us. And it was a road trip. We didn't fly, and you know, I kind of wanted to fly though, but you know, it's okay.
Can we settle this right now, please? Because felt like when we got there, everybody was upset with me because we decided to take the road.
We needed to ride.
It was going to be a beautiful experience.
It was a beautiful experience.
Three guys, three chums out on the open road. Right. I mean, look at it.
And we made it through Missouri with no three brothers. Actually made it across the country.
Problem with the police. Well,
yeah, not one. Yeah,
that was one thing you mentioned. Is that you were for sure that we were going to
at least one time, at least one time. And but I did have to look at a couple times. I had to look at y'all and say, you might want to bag up on accelerator a little bit because we're going through Missouri.
Richard was driving. Yeah. I always keep my foot on the pedal respectably. I'd never ever go over the speed limit. I mean,
but
just
it was
not my thing.
It was a great trip. I mean, our goals were to reengage, I think, in the conversation that we're having here locally with students in the Midwest, and we were fortunate enough to go to our first stop was in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, where we went to Alverno College, which is a all-female college.
Right.
And Dr. Nat Godley arranged that conversation for us. So, man, just some of your reflections on Alverno. And let's even broaden it up. Some of your reflections on Milwaukee.
Can we go back to the toll booth?
Oh, yeah, yeah. We can go back to the toll booth. Yeah, let's start there.
I mean, very first encounter I had, we were on the highway. I mean, I'm driving. And Mike's telling me, you know, they have several tollways throughout the city. You're going to have to stop and pay eventually and often. And so
this is Chicago, folks.
And so we hit our first one. And, you know, I'm used to here in Oklahoma, we have the Oklahoma Turnpike and people are usually very friendly. Oh, hey, good morning, good afternoon. How can you, do I need to get your receipt? You know, that type of thing. And Mike is like, these people are not like that.
Hold on, just a second, ET. I got to chime in with you real quick.
Okay.
He didn't give you that disclosure.
He did, though.
Until after
that
encounter.
Yeah, he let...
I feel like something was priming me, though, for that type of
thing. I wanted you to have that experience.
Yeah, he was telling us that Chicago people are different. But he apparently it's known that the toll booth people up there are not happy.
They don't like their jobs.
What I'm going to say is that you guys created that situation and that experience for me. But okay, let me go on with the story. So I'm there. The guy's like, you know, $14.95 for the toll. I'm like, wow, $14.95 is kind of high. But I pay the money anyway. They're stealing, but okay. And then in the background, Mike and Richard are asking me, you know, do you need a receipt? Do you need to get a receipt from him? And the guy is actually,
I think that was Richard because I never get a receipt. Okay. I never even request for a receipt.
I think that was just in your head.
Somebody behind me was saying receipt, and it was not coming out of my mouth.
It's your conscience.
And so the guy is asking me, like looking at me like crazy, like, it'd be better if I can at least hear you. And I'm thinking, I haven't even asked you anything. But he was asking me, you know, did I want a receipt? And I was just, I mean, I went ahead and took the receipt anyway, but it was not pleasant. I mean, this guy, this son of a person whose parents took out the time and energy to cultivate him and shape him into being a good young man, he just didn't do a good job.
Well, let me say this, though. Let me say this on his behalf, and I'm not justifying his behavior, but you can only imagine the amount of people that come through there and the type of, you know, what they deal with. So
I was being pleasant, though, is my thing.
But, man, they've been doing that for years. They've been doing that
you
for years.
You even gave him the DT smile.
And the thing about it is he probably thought you were trying to be a wise guy by smiling at him, you know. But
what you think you're better than me?
But really, man, they're out there in difficult weather, and we know how the weather gets up there, and they're just known as not being the most pleasant people. I was shocked he looked at you because usually they just reach their hand, get their money, and just, you know, just flip it up and you're on your way. I mean, and I maybe people ask for a receipt, but I never ask for a receipt because I just know
when you're gonna have to.
I just know they got to do a little bit more work, and that's probably just gonna piss them off some. So that was kind of the the introduction to you know, but there's nice folks in Chicago and
of course,
and Milwaukee.
Of course.
And,
we met some of them.
Yeah, we met some of them. But we hit El Verno College.
El Verno was very, very beautiful campus, first of all. And so like getting there, just being able to see some of the things they've done on the campus is really shocking and mind blowing. But I felt a really proud, you know, in that moment, just to be there and to be with Mike and kind of be sharing that experience with you, you know, being it's your hometown and, you know, kind of your area. But once I figured out that, you know, they had just gotten, it was all female college. They had just gotten a write up in the Wall Street Journal for being the, you know, number one school for peer
encouragement, I think it was.
Right. And so all of those things were just kind of happening at the same time, like just that day or week, you know, that article that came out. And so I felt more, you know, even proud to be engaged on that campus at the time. But, man, I mean, the students were amazing. We had a few that were shy at first.
Yeah.
We got them to talk and open up. And it was a beautiful experience to be driving through Wisconsin, literally seeing this city, you know, split in half. In some of the areas that we visited, you know, you could kind of see the disparities between the two areas and the very, very drastic contrast between communities. But yeah, I mean, El Verno was dope, as the kids say.
Yeah.
I was like I said, I mean, I was just happy to be there and experiencing that with you for the first time. You know, we're probably the only black podcast that ever touched foot on the campus, right?
History. Oh, absolutely. I would definitely agree with that statement. Richard, what was your reflections, brother?
It was almost a surreal moment, honestly, because as you guys stated, you know, this was a college we went to that just received a huge award, and they were still just so cool and so humble to allow us to, you know, use a room. And they were super nice in trying to accommodate everything. The lady, she offered us free meal tickets up there to eat, which we did walk past the cafeteria. Yeah, it was smelling good.
Yeah, but no.
I do have to say, Mike did drop bombs on Cobbs.
How was Cobbs, brother?
Man, I was stuffed like throughout the whole day. We ate Cobbs around 1 o'clock?
Yeah.
I mean, it's beautiful. If no one's ever been, we're going to, I think me and DT got some snaps we did of Cobbs, but it's almost like the old school burger joint.
Yeah, like a time machine.
Yeah, like a time period that we've never lived in, but it looked like fast food places look like when McDonald's was just starting and stuff like that. And, you know, you got all the workers in there. They were very in their spot. There was no wall hiding what they doing to your food.
Exactly.
You clearly see them cooking. And, man, that burger was just like...
Off the chain. I had a fried egg on mine.
You had a fried egg on yours.
That's right.
And you had the onion rings. And those onion rings, that batter was something else.
Yeah, man. It's, you know, Cops is... You just, you know... We could fly there right now and pick it up, and you know, it'd be worth the trip.
The trip was worth it. And so, yeah, Cobbs was, man. So when we came back to record the second part, I was just so like, Cobbs took the nerves out of me. I was just there. Let's go.
I also feel like, how dare we try to do something after eating like that?
Man.
I'm like, man, what are we doing? Like, you're done, DT. You're done.
I think recording the show was okay for me. I think I start struggling after the show. I was like, I'm about to pass out. Mike, you gotta get me home, dude. I'm about to embarrass you. But no, the experience was nice. Yeah, the people up there were wonderful. The stories that they got to express to us on the show was phenomenal.
Yeah.
And I think it was, like DT was saying, it was a privilege for us to be able to see that spark in your eyes from being able to be back at your hometown and see the young people aren't letting you down just yet.
Yeah.
I was re-listening to that episode and just the voice you had, especially when we were interviewing,
Dr. Gottlieb.
Yeah, Gottlieb.
Gottlieb.
And how you were just like, you know what? I came up here and I was surprised. You know, back in Oklahoma, nothing against my Oklahomans, but, you know, when I interact with the students down there, they always saying that, you know, I can't wait to leave. And I can't wait to get up and move to a different city and move to a different, you know, part of the country. But people here, it made me feel good to hear that, you know, my young people are eager to stay in Milwaukee and help Milwaukee.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it was beautiful, especially because right before then you had gave us a documentary tour.
right.
Through, like, his stepping ground, man. Like, he went through memory lane. It felt like we literally, like, everything just started waving, like how they do in the TV shows. It started waving, and then we were back. When Michael was there as a kid.
Right.
Yeah, it was crazy, man. First stop was what house I grew up in. I mean, that was, and I appreciate you brothers experiencing that with me.
I mean, we've been in corners in Mike's neighborhood, man.
Oh, we were there.
What a cat grew up at. Had a little
his DNA was there.
Had street fights in there.
Yeah.
Right?
Look tight, ride my bike.
Riding his bike. Riding his bike.
Oh, man. It was, you know, we have to take a break here, but we're going to come back. And I want to talk about kind of the what you guys were experiencing, first of all, when we were driving through in that dichotomy of community, right? When we were in the hood, when we were in Whitefish Bay, when we were down at the lake, when we were at El Verno. I mean, all these different, when we were on the south side, all these different communities that we were in. I'm just curious about what were your thoughts as they relate to the black community. So, folks, we're gonna take a break. We'll be right back.
This is Quraysh Ali, Lansana, poet, author, educator, and Oklahomie. And when I listen to podcasts, I'm on that one mic, one voice joint.
Hi. This is DT of the One Mic, One Voice podcast. Just want to let you guys know you can go over to iTunes and search us at One Mic, One Voice, and be sure to rate and review our episodes. Let us know about any feedback that you have and what you enjoy about the episodes. Also, you can go over to Stitcher, where you can get the latest and freshest episodes of our podcast streamed directly to your smartphone or iPad. No downloading or syncing. How cool? Real smooth. Also, we'd just like to take the time to thank you for your time and for your energy and for spending time with us as we discuss the historical record of our time.
All right. We're back, folks.
We're back.
So, as I pose a question to you, you and Richard, talk a little bit about, man, just, yeah, talk about it.
Rich, would you like to go first?
I've never experienced an area that you could clearly tell what part of town you were on just from dogs. Mm. And what I mean by that is, it's not even jokingly, it's like you could tell what part of town you were on from, you saw a sense of peace of mind from individuals who were in the good part of town because they were walking their dog without a care.
Mm-hmm.
In the other part of town, where you did not see dogs being walked, you saw people with an urgency. Either A, just trying to get somewhere because they had to be there, whether they had to be to the bus stop, whether they had to run to the grocery store because they had to run back home, to where they were just always kind of watching their backs. You could click, I mean, it was, it's, I didn't understand what you were saying. Milwaukee was the most segregated city in the United States. But I think we were able to get a glimpse of that just from something as simple as who's walking their dogs.
Man, that's deep. That is. I mean, that's, wow. that's, and I can picture the neighborhood that you're talking about right now, in the neighborhoods that you were talking about right now. And that's so true.
I mean, to a degree, it was like that was almost a staple, right? Mm-hmm. Because most of the good neighborhoods we walked through, I mean, we drove through, people were out walking the dogs. I mean,
yeah, like no matter where we went.
Hoping their heart, smiling their face, you know. I mean, the sun was shining brightly in those areas. And we went over to, what was the other spot? Right off the highway.
Oh, you're talking about?
Right when we left Whitefish Bay and got up into that area where it was like, just terrible, right? From
oh yeah, that's still the inner city north. That's off of North
and
Avenue.
So in this place over on North Avenue, as Mike is explaining, there was like an instant storm. Like once you got off, there's like a hail storm. It started raining. People were sad. Little babies were crying in the streets. It was terrible.
Yeah,
it was terrible. Nobody was walking a dog.
Yeah.
The dogs were scared to come outside.
Yeah. Or the dogs would come outside and kill you. You know what I mean? Yeah, yeah.
But no, seriously, though, like, well, I can only really speak to my experience with the Northeast community, you know, being a black community here in Oklahoma City. But it kind of gave me a bigger picture as far as, you know, what black communities are dealing with in other areas. Mm. And in my comparison of the two cities, I would not say that Oklahoma City has as big of a problem as they think they do in comparison to some of the things we've seen. I mean, houses boarded up. I mean, lots of them. Not just like, you know, a few here and there and, you know, a couple people going to be okay. It's like a whole destitute community, like, in place there.
Yeah. And, Michael, let me ask you – sorry, DT. I want to ask you something because DT brought up the north side of Oklahoma – compared to Milwaukee, I know the first thing that I quickly was able to grasp was just like, this is the just the landscape.
Yeah, a much bigger
huge,
area.
Huge, yeah. Huge. The east side here, you know, stretches from like, you know, Reno, maybe up to 36, maybe around 50 if you want to get really nitpicky. And then it's probably from I-35 all the way over to Broadway Extension, roughly. Over there, it was like,
well, we didn't even see it all.
Yeah, it was like a city. It was a city. Yeah, exactly. It was a city. Yeah. It was a city within a city. And it's weird because I look at their problem is like it's just so much territory.
Yeah.
To even I can't even imagine how to even fix it.
Yeah.
Oklahoma's problem, I feel like it's more of just like the borders are getting closed in and you know, development is just kind of just like, you know, getting, you know, trying to revamp it, but, you know, just pushing in. But over there, it's just like, it's just sad. Mm-hmm. You know, we got to watch that film as well over one of the zip codes.
Yeah, 53206, zip code where my house that I grew up in at. That's the zip code. Mm-hmm. I mean, those were, when we were watching the video, I was seeing city streets that I walked down on, rode my bike on, caught the bus on. I mean, the reality is
over 67% of the men in that area will go to prison. Oh, yeah. Had some relationship to the prison system.
Absolutely.
That's ridiculous, man. Oh, man. Like, wow.
But the geography of the inner city in Milwaukee is massive. And so, man, you can live out on, you know, on 50th and Capitol Drive. Or you can live on, 12th and Meineke. And people that understand what I'm talking about, they understand the distance between that. That's still the hood. Mm-hmm. I mean, I can go here. If I go west and then I hit Broadway, and I'm out of the hood.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You understand? I mean, it take me 1 or 2 minutes. That's not the way it is. And that's why, I think one of the most valuable experiences going there is really seeing the magnitude of what black communities are dealing with. Just think about a Ferguson. Just think about Southside Chicago. Just think about these areas that are massive, right? And as Richard has said, man, where do you begin, right? Mm-hmm. How do you solve the problem when you have that high incarceration rate and the unemployment rate is just ridiculous, right?
Okay, so let me ask you, Mike. I know we talked to the students, and that was one of the big things, is that most of them did want to keep their talents home, mm-hmm. so that way they could be of service to the people that they were going to be living amongst, in a sense. But with all the challenges, like you said, it's really hard to see the light at the end of the tunnel. Mm-hmm. And so what is your message to those children that we talked to, those students that did have hope, in comparison to what you went back and you've seen as of today?
Yeah, it's worse than when I grew up, for sure. I can just encourage them to continue to use their passion and their commitment to change Milwaukee, and what area they may find themselves in, if it's in social work, if it's in the political realm, if it's in education, keep that passion and commitment. And I think small change is very important, and I think then larger systemic change. And what I mean by that, when you can change a child or a few in the neighborhood, I think you have done something of great value. And I think sometimes we look at the micro level versus the macro level. And we want to see those macro changes. But those micro changes, I think if you can accumulate enough of them, then you can definitely have an overall change. So I would just encourage them. Again, I don't, sometimes I consider myself an optimist, but as you saw, Milwaukee's got some serious problems. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Serious problems. And we even went by the site where, we didn't get up to Sherman Park where the recent riot was at, but we talked about Sherman Park. We didn't have a chance to get up there. Because we had to get back to Chicago, but yeah, I mean that we could spend a whole show just talking about Milwaukee, right. Let alone moving to Kenosha.
The other two cities.
Yeah, moving to Kenosha and then Chicago. But
talk about Malnati's for a second.
For what now?
Malnati's. Luminati's pizza.
Oh, yeah, Luminati's. Yeah, 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 yeah.
That was our first English experience.
Man, I wanted to take them to Geno's East, but it was a little bit too far out. So
and this was the day we arrived to Chicago first.
Yeah.
And if you don't mind, Michael, just for the listeners. So we drove nonstop. Well, me and DT drove nonstop. Yeah.
Mike took the wheel.
I supervised.
Yeah,
I took the wheel and went with Milwaukee.
Good job supervising.
He was navigating.
Yeah, real good on that one highway we stayed on. We stayed in Chicago. That's when we went to the pizza place. Mm-hmm. And then we drove to Milwaukee the next morning. Stayed in Milwaukee that night.
Yes.
Left Milwaukee, went to Kenosha, and then from Kenosha we went back to Chicago, stayed in Chicago, toured Chicago the next day, then we went back. I just wanted to give them
absolutely.
The pizza.
Yeah.
Luminati. Michael's green eyes played tricks on the lady, and she was
that lady old enough to be my mama, man. Watch yourself. No, she was real nice.
Very
and,
sweet lady
man,
from New Orleans.
Yeah. Yeah, and yeah, she was from New Orleans, had been in Chicago 30-plus
years.
She probably owned that place.
I know, had been there
she
for
She wanted to give Mike the whole store.
She said, darn her did.
Take what you need, baby. Gave him the miso soup. Was that what it was
no,
called?
No, she gave me tiramisu.
Tiramisu.
Yeah,
okay.
Then she gave us another dessert that she gave us.
She gave us, I think, all
desserts. Gave Mike free water.
Yeah,
I had to pay
for Coke.
She told Mike. Mike accidentally grabbed it, but I guess like she just forgot to ring it up for him.
Yeah,
yeah. I said, "It's just a water. It's just a water, baby." And I realized at that moment that I did not get a water.
So what was the piece? What was the piece that you got? Which one did you get?
I had the deep dish.
Okay, you went with the deep dish.
The personal,
yeah. Which was small.
It was enough.
Yeah, it was enough. And she had conned me into getting the bigger one.
For the type of diet that I've been on, like that's I could have ate that for 2 days.
Right.
But we got down there, it was just tearing up stuff.
Tearing up stuff, man. It
burger
was,
after burger after burger.
Yeah. Pizza was amazing.
Pizza.
But can't go to Chicago without getting pizza, folks. And so what we're going to do, we're going to take a break. I think our in-studio guests are probably here. We're going to go into that, and then we're going to come back and finish up the show with what we did in Kenosha, Wisconsin, and what we did in Chi-Town. Chi-Town was nice.
Chi-Town was so beautiful, man.
It was like
amazing. Hey, did y'all get y'all's DNA results back?
He did. I did. Did you?
Uh-huh.
We had to talk about that for a minute, because I know this brother from...
I was surprised, actually.
I really was.
Okay, yeah. I haven't got mine back yet.
You ain't got yours?
No.
I think we should wait until Mike gets here. They about to hunt
you down, Mike. Yeah, I think I'm on the FBI list or something like that.
Yeah.
Man. He's got the X gene.
Oh, yeah, he does.
All right, folks, we'll be right
back.
Thank you for downloading this episode. Here on iTunes, Stitcher, Podbean, Google Play Music, or whatever podcasting library you're listening to this show on, please rate and review. Those reviews and ratings help us tremendously. We thank you.
Hi everyone, this is Roxy Davis,
and this is Deborah Burris,
and we are
the Roxy by Design Show.
Our show is designed to bring healing as we share our stories while God redesigns our lives.
So take a ride with us.
So you can find us at
Podbean, iTunes,
Facebook and Twitter,
and
blackandstudios.com. So thank you everyone for listening to the Roxy by Design Show. You have a blessed day.
We love you.
This is Dr. Laura Gillott, and when I listen to podcasts, I always listen to the One Mic, One Voice show.
Welcome back. Yeah, we have a slight delay. Brother Angel, he's coming down from heaven.
Yeah, he's flying
and,
in.
So he's flying in, you know, and so we're going
to get the wings.
First class.
So we're going to... We're going to wait just for a few minutes on him. But let's talk about the DNA, man.
Yeah,
so,
dude. It actually kind of blew my mind. It's funny, too, because at this moment, when we was waiting that line forever.
Hold on. Set up how we got involved in this DNA thing anyway. Do
Michael
you remember?
Was mad.
I was mad. I'm gonna tell you, I was a little salty. But you know what? But you know what? I yielded because you guys wanted to do it. So, because we listen, folks, we were in Chicago for one day, and I wanted to show them, like, yeah, I want to take them to the South Side. You know, I want to show them, man, we might even hit some of the suburbs, and you know, so I really want, and so we went, and we went to go see the bean. Yeah, the bean, you know, the huge
liquid silver
metal
bean.
Yeah, you know, Richard. So I actually surprised Richard. He didn't know we were going there. He said, "Man, I want to see the bean." So I took him and surprised him.
What are you talking about?
He did hit me with that. Yeah.
And so I took him and surprised him. And while we were walking to see that wonderful art piece, a show called The Gifted, if you haven't seen it, which I have watched it on Monday nights, which is pretty good. Mm-hmm. We're standing out there to promote the show. This happens in Chicago all the time, right? So they're standing out there, and they're giving away MyHeritage DNA. They're giving away free DNA tests, right? And so we're walking, and then DT and Richard are like, "Man, we need to get our DNA done." I'm like, "Bruh, okay."
Now, just as a disclosure,
we in Chicago,
Just as a disclosure, I wasn't that excited about it.
And, you know, it's this long line, right? I'm like, but
super
long. But we in Chicago, baby. We want to, you know.
The guy said it would only take 30 minutes.
No. And so, but let you what D hit we met. So I had to just shut up when he said this. Because he said, I said, "Man, well, it's going to be a long time." He said, "Well, you always telling me to get it done."
Right.
Ouch.
So I was like, "Well, he is right."
And it was free.
And it was free. So we went in there. We had the DNA test done. And you guys got back your results. So what, you know.
Here, I'm trying to pull like the percentages up right now again. But I remember I got on my way back home, and I completely forgot about it.
Yeah.
Because it's been, 4 weeks or something like that. And, dude, to my surprise, so Nigerian.
Okay.
What's the, you got
to
break
it. Well, I'm trying to pull it up now. Yeah, okay. I'm struggling. My brother.
Yes, brother.
Let me see. You want to talk about yours? I'm pulling
okay,
up
I am also quick. Nigerian. That's why I'm telling you, yes, brother.
Okay.
So
you have funded motherland, my brother.
Man, I've got Nigerian 62%, 13.5% West African. That's all my people over there off the coastline. You know what I mean? Just hanging out in the shade. She can chill on the beach and all that. I've got 16% East African, made up of 11% Kenyan and 4% Somali, and 1.2% Central African, 5.3% split between Scandinavia and English, and Central American and Indigenous Amazonian.
Mm. Ooh, Amazonian.
Yeah. Well, brother, you scrape from the motherland.
Basically. Over 90% African. Yes.
And you were talking about how your family has talked about so much of Native American in
so
you,
funny,
right?
Right. So bless my grandmother's heart, you know. She's getting up in age and her memory is leaving. But, you know, I visited her over the past weekend. I have really long hair. My locks are natural. They're all mine. I never had an extension, a weave, or anything like that.
Yeah, ain't got no horse hair in there.
And so, you know, I was sitting side by side with her on the couch, and for whatever reason, she might have forgotten that my hair was long. So I stood up, and I'm walking the other direction. She's like, "Day-Day, do you have a wig on?" And I'm laughing to myself, right? But I said, "You know, no, Grandma, don't." And she's like, "That's all your hair?" I said, "Yes, Grandma, it is." And she was like, "Oh, it must be that Indian part of us."
The Indian.
And, you know, I thought to myself, you know, how long that story probably have went on where people are, you know, taking the features of your hair or your skin or whatever and claiming them for other ethnicities and had nothing to do with my ancestry.
Mm.
And so I'm looking at the chart like Native American, 0%.
Yeah.
0%.
Did you find
I'm like on the website and I'm just like lost.
You need to just go into your DNA thing.
They probably had to recalculate you, bro.
You need to find that.
You ain't my
brother. You need to find that. So, because I want to know what your percentages are. But what we going to do, this guest I got can hold his own anyway. So, you know, he it ain't like he needs some help. Okay, let's just be real about it, right? We trying to do Angel a favor, let him get a word in edgewise, right? Really. So, but what we're going to do, we're going to take a break, folks, and we're going to come back and we will have our in-studio guests or guests live. Folks, we'll be right back.
Thank you for downloading this episode. Here on iTunes, Stitcher, Podbean, Google Play Music, or whatever podcasting library you're listening to this show on, please rate and review. Those reviews and ratings help us tremendously. We thank you.
This is Quraysh Ali Lansana, poet, author, educator, and Oklahomie. And when I listen to podcasts, I'm on that one mic, one voice joint.
Welcome back, folks. Yeah, heaven's mentioned an angel because it's in the studio now. But yeah. But man, I you know, this has been a long time coming, heaven. My friend Jeremiah Davis into the studio with me. He is a not only a good friend, but a dynamic. I'm gonna call him brother because he is a brother to
much,
me.
Much appreciated, Michael Owens, brother Owens.
And so Jeremiah is the artistic director for Oklahoma Contemporary Arts, and we also have Angel Little, which is. He's not a stranger to One Mic, One Voice.
No, he's
been with us before, back in the day, right?
Yeah,
a couple years ago.
Yeah.
And brother, what is your title at Oklahoma
Contemporary? I'm a teaching artist there, but okay. I'm also a co-curator for the Not For Sale show.
Okay, so. Great. Man, welcome to the One Mic, One Voice show.
Thank you. Thank you for having us. We really appreciate it. It's great to be here. Yeah.
And let's talk about a little bit about what you got going on, man.
Sure. So, as Mike mentioned, I am the artistic director of Oklahoma Contemporary, and the current show that we have in our gallery now is called Not For Sale. Okay. Not For Sale is first and foremost a graffiti exhibition. Angel is the co-curator along with Chris Skurr, but it's more than just a graffiti show, and I'll let Angel get into it, because really, Not For Sale embraces the culture of hip-hop.
Okay.
And so we're bringing all the elements together with this show, including an event that we've got going on next weekend, November 4th, the One Soul Charity Not For Sale Hip Hop Jam at Oklahoma Contemporary. I'll let Angel kick that off a little bit, but let me just first say the reason that for us doing the show, there's multiple reasons, but last year Angel came to us with an idea, and he said, you know, what about doing some kind of a graffiti show to showcase the work that's happened, the culture that's happened here in Oklahoma, and the artists that have been able to contribute to this culture over the last 30 years. And we were immediately into the idea, and so we started working with Angel and then Chris Skurr, his co-curator, to develop the framework for the exhibition and to talk about how we're going to put it all together and generate a ton of programming to make sure that all the elements are represented. We had to make sure it wasn't just some visual art up on the walls. We had to make sure that we brought something for the MC, the DJ, the breaker, and then tie in the knowledge element. And I think that we've done that pretty successfully, thanks to Angel and the artists and everybody who's kicking it. So, Angel, do you want to give a little bit of info on Not For Sale and then maybe talk about the jam next week?
All right. So there were three basic points for kind of creating Not For Sale. The first was to showcase the artwork in an environment that normally you don't see it. Like, you don't see it in galleries like that. Especially here in Oklahoma, you don't see that. Like, you know, I know some other places have done it, but to see it in this capacity here in Oklahoma was a real big step. Like, hey, let's go for it. Let's show it in that. Two, to start the conversation. Like, you know, these are artists. Yeah, you know, they're called writers, but these are artists. These guys have spent 30 plus years on a career that they don't get paid for. Mm-hmm. You know, they do it and they love it.
Do it with passion.
And that's why it's called Not For Sale, because you don't buy this. It's up there for you to feel, to see, and to explore. And so that was the second point. And the third point was to educate the community about it. Like, what does this mean in the first place? Like, really, how is this important? Not just to hip-hop, but to everyone around them. Like, how is this something that's we should be supporting and should be a part of? And
should be involved with. So that was the big target with all of it. Like, hey, let's get out there. Let's get the community involved. Let's reach out. Got together with Skur, legend. Guy runs all the way back, like, what, 87?
When did he say 87. He 87? Was saying 87, yeah. They saw Style Wars and then flipped their lids, and he and his brother had to start writing.
So it was him. It was Skur, Heck, and Kodak. And they started a group called UAT, which, you know, Oklahoma really didn't have, like, a prominent crew that was, like, really representing. You were part of another crew if you were doing something. So for these guys, like, you know, this is something they've been living their whole life and never got this kind of love or shine and never been seen in this environment. So it's like, hey, let's bring these guys in. Let's put them up there on the walls. Let's let people see this and let's let them see, hey, look, these guys have been living this. Let's give it a look.
It's been tremendous for Oklahoma Contemporary. We've had a lot of traffic come through, thousands and thousands of folks in the first couple of weeks alone, really connecting with some different communities, getting young people excited about it, getting them to think about art in a different way, and inspire them to create their own contribution artistically into the world. And let me bring something up, because Angel speaks more eloquently about this than anyone I've ever known. When we first started this idea, we were all cool with it, everybody on staff, but there were some concerns about, oh, what about the perception of defacing of property or the history of illegal activity with graffiti art? And we said, okay, we'll get ahead of it. We engaged with police departments, chambers of commerce, small businesses, outreach, and got ahead of the issue. But so one of the things that we run into is best, I think, summarized by a comment from a lovely woman that I was speaking with at a dinner party last month when I was explaining the show. She said, but Jeremiah, it's vandalism. So I responded, I think, in a way that she understood and appreciated. But Angel, how about you respond to that issue of it being vandalism with the defacing of property?
All right. So if we look at, for some, the actual essence of it being graffiti versus street art is that it is done without permission. Mm-hmm. Like, for it to be graffiti, it's done without permission. But
that's the purest perspective.
That's
right?
The purest perspective, the elitist of it. But I think we've hit a point now where so many people have been influenced by this culture. In conversations, many people brought up Graffiti Bridge that was a part of Oklahoma's history. And how many people had their names on that bridge, on that wall, before it was tore down? And how many people complained about it until it was tore down? And then how many people came out of the shadow saying that was a very big part of our history? And I want a piece of that because I knew my name was up there. A part of me was up there. And we look at graffiti and its history itself. It goes all the way back to, like, cavemen and their drawings. You know, they let you know they were there. And so the idea of being able to do this, being able to show it, it was like, okay, we're going to take something that you might not have an understanding of, what it means to be one of these artists, what it means to feel that, and we're going to put it in a way that you can engage it, something that's, like, tangible and understandable. Like, yeah, let's go with that. And yeah, like, you know, Jeremiah said, there was a lot of people that was like, but at the end of the day, it's vandalism. Mm-hmm. It was like, only if you want it to be, you know, yeah. Like, if you want it to be, then it is. You know, if I see a blank wall out there, that represents what's around me, nothing. But if I put color and life in, or something on that wall, now I'm telling you, look, this is how I'm feeling. There is something here. There's emotion, there's a drive, there's a push. And you look at the culture of hip hop itself, like, that's a very big part of it. Like, hey, let's push who we are and how we feel. Like, and the culture of hip hop celebrates the differences of who you are. They encourage you, come different. Don't come the same as me or the same as someone else. Like, be yourself, please.
Yeah.
Bring what you have. And so with that being said, it is a different box for a lot of people. Like, okay, but how is that really expressing a difference or a freedom?
Yeah, and I think it's, you know, graffiti is a lot like, you know, some of these movements we have throughout history, being hip-hop and other movements. And the question is, how do they become legitimate, you know, in the eyes of the larger public? Right. And I think a lot of times when you have an infusion of the dominant culture into this, when they become artists or they become hip-hop rappers or artists, right? There's a group that feels like they have some sort of pathway into that, and then it starts to legitimize it, right? In a sense, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, you're gonna have a group that are always against certain genres of music as well as artistic form, but I think it's a pattern that we see over and over again, mm-hmm. something that starts in a very, we would say, minority mm-hmm. sector that becomes so pervasive and so strong and so enticing that the larger and maybe the naivete of some of the larger groups says, man, I really like that. Or what are they saying? I really, you know, like the groove. I like this. I like that. And then it begins to roll more. And so that's why I think we're seeing it come even more mainstream. I don't know. That's my opinion. But what are your thoughts behind that?
Yeah, I agree. It's just because of how many people grew up in that culture or in that lifestyle. And the fact of how it's available to them, you know, a lot of work, sometimes you have to go into a gallery to see it. You have to go into this location to see it. Why? Graffiti, you saw it everywhere. You know, you saw it on the side of train cars. You saw it on walls. You saw it everywhere.
New York in the 80s, it was all over the place.
Yeah, they crushed it out there.
I mean, yeah.
I mean, even here with us, you know, you go up north like Kansas City, between like 85 and... I want to say 85 and almost 2000. It was worse than New York had ever been. Like, you know, Kansas City was like completely crushed, completely covered all over the place. And then you start seeing changes in acceptance. People who grew up in this culture saying, "Wait, but you know, I never had a problem with that. Like, I felt like it was okay. Like, I understood why they did it, and I understand that." And I mean, that's the pattern we see with a lot of things when revolutions start, mm-hmm. like, or new things become the new. And then it starts to become the old, and then another new thing becomes the new. We look at the culture of hip-hop. It's young, but it's a worldwide phenomenon. It's the most consumed culture in the world right now. And to see that culture expand so far out and have such an impact right now, you know, who knows how it might be perceived 20 years ago, the same way with ballet. When it started out of Russia, it started to become like this huge thing. We look at jazz. Jazz became this worldwide phenomenon. Now it's like, you know, old people listen to jazz.
Rock and roll, R.I.P. Fast Domino.
Yeah.
For contributing, bridging those.
Yeah, but I'll throw in a little, you know, something for the jazz musician, though.
Yeah.
That took a lot of skill. It took a lot of years
for sure.
of training. That
for
took
sure.
a lot of, and you could have, you the musician was also the vocalist was mm-hmm. also so it was this idea of the entertainer, right?
Mm-hmm.
Really didn't come around until, you know, Mike started doing his thing, Jackson started doing mm-hmm. his thing, and that became kind of the thing. But before that, if you didn't play an instrument, you were looked down on.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, you didn't have the skill. So it's much easier today, especially with technology, to get your computer and get you some beats and, you know, get you some software. Mm-hmm. And if you can spit, then you're good to go.
But, you know, Cab Calloway, if Cab Calloway were born in 1965, dude would have been an MC. I mean, he would have been. Cab Calloway is the OG MC.
Yeah,
so I think that there is, and there are major influential elements mm-hmm. of jazz music that infused hip hop that continue to influence it. There's overlap. You know, Ron Carter getting together with Tribe Called Quest back in the day. I mean, there's lots of those kind of overlaps and connections. If I may pose a question.
Absolutely.
I wouldn't normally interject this kind of question, but this is one mic, one voice. So
that's
this
right.
is what we're trying to talk about.
That's true. Right.
What I'm interested in creatively, artistically with this show, with Oklahoma Contemporary, is giving these artists a platform for them to do what they do best, and then inviting people in who may not necessarily associate graffiti with an art center, or a museum, a gallery, an institution, and getting them to come in and consider this as an art form, just like they would if they go to the Museum of Art and they see the Matisse show or Kehinde Wiley. They mm-hmm. they engage with it in that context. Mm-hmm. But you brought it up, and Angel started to talk about this process, this cyclical process. My question is this: how do we, as artists, as arts professionals, as people who are invested in culture, how do we make sure that when we're highlighting these particular contributions of culture from minority communities, from people of color, that we don't accelerate or expedite the appropriation cycle, where we highlight an art form, the dominant culture, as Michael said, gets a hold of it, and then takes that and then profits from it, versus reinvesting those resources and those cultural resources, those economic resources, back into the communities that created these movements and these mm-hmm. art forms. So I open it up to anybody to speak on that.
Well, you know, you said what I was trying to play around with a little bit.
Let's just talk about it.
Yeah.
No, because it needs to be brought up.
Yeah, and I mean, man, it goes back to, I always like to say this, he who has the, and I say he, not she, because I want to be politically correct, he who has the purse has the power, mm-hmm. right? And I think a lot of times artists are vulnerable when it comes to that, yeah. right? Mm-hmm. And oftentimes artists don't get in it for this, right? They get in it for the self-expression. And I think we live in a society where that's appropriated all the time, where we take culture or we take even identity and we make it profitable because we have the resources to do that. Mm-hmm. I think part of it is just awareness of what's taking place. Mm-hmm. I think being able to empower artists and to teach them to put themselves in spaces and situations where they can be the master of their own craft and their own material, that's what's got to happen. And yeah. I think too many times artists say yes to deals that cause that effect, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Because they don't know.
I'm trying to make it. Right? I'm trying to get there, right? And so I think there's as an artist has got to be a business person.
Yeah, mm-hmm. it's true.
Mm-hmm. I mean, they have to be a business person. And if you're talented and you're just doing your thing and you don't know business, you're gonna get used.
It's true.
Because somebody's gonna look at you and go, you know what?
You're a product.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Right. So I just think we what I love about what you do, and Angel, what you do as well as Oklahoma Contemporary, is that you're making art serious, right? I mean, the schools have taken art out, right? Yeah. Somebody has had to say that artists are serious, their work is serious, their work is valuable to our culture, their work makes a difference to our culture, just like the cars that are being made, right? Just like the oil that we're pulling out of the ground. Art is important to our community. And I think as that social capital grows and that knowledge grows, then it's less to be manipulated and used.
Yeah, yeah. And that's something that a very big part of this show is trying to get in front of that. We look at the image of hip-hop and how it's taken askew, especially here in the U.S., versus, like, if you go to Russia and the image of hip-hop, it's a completely different image. You know, you listen to what Vladimir Putin says about hip-hop in Russia, and he's like, he loves it. It saves his country. He can't imagine a breaker being on drugs or, you know, getting high. And here in the U.S., when's the last time you even heard somebody talking about a breaker like that? Mm-hmm. Like, you know, even bringing up the dance, they're just dancing.
Yeah.
Or they associate hip-hop with, like, a website, like World Star Hip-Hop. Like, that's not hip-hop. But the association is the dangerous thing. And then we look at, yeah, of course, that attempt to get that money out of it, that appropriation, like, you know, I still got to eat. So these kind of things are where we are. And people are thinking about that. Like,
hey, guys, we have a question for one of our listeners.
Sure.
They say, how do you deflect any backlash as it relates to comparing positive uplifting graffiti versus gang graffiti?
Right. Mm. So can I kick it off first, and Angel, please fill in. So interestingly enough, when we reached out to police departments, they were really excited about the show. And what they have learned is through use of permission walls, through the experience of people inviting artists in to use spaces to throw up art on walls or public areas, that actually reduces the incidence of illegal, and I'm putting that in quotations, graffiti or vandalism or the defacing of property or gang-related tagging that really is just about marking territory. It's not necessarily also about creative expression. First and foremost, it's not an act of art or creativity. It's an act of claiming territory or promoting your set. So we've actually seen the police department support what we're doing because it helps to eliminate those elements. And if, you know, I'd invite the listener to come out to Oklahoma Contemporary anytime now through the end of November to see the show and to look at some of our educational materials and to see how through the education, through the teaching process, through the exhibition process of Not For Sale, there's a big difference between mindless scrawling on walls mm-hmm. versus the calculated, the planned creative process that mm-hmm. these artists go through. Angel, you want to pick it up?
Very much. Kind of hit it on the head with most of that. And it is really about, there's two ways to really kind of work against that, to help stop some of that. And one is with businesses, you know, business owners, the communities. Like, you know, if you're more accepting of those who are more craft based and more artisan with what they do versus kids who are just scribbling stuff or, you know, just doing random things. If you have work up that's done by somebody who's well designed and professional or just well included into what they do, then it reduces the amount of negative that you see up there on the walls. And two, like, educate the youth before they get out there. Like, reach the kids, get to them, and teach them. Here's the right way to do this. A phrase that one of the artists says, you know, there's no wrong way to there's no right way to do graffiti, but there's a million wrong ways. Mm-hmm. And so it's about teaching them, hey, avoid those things. So, yeah.
Right.
Great.
Yeah. And we have another comment that says, this is a comment, not a question. Those who look for negativity will find what they want to see.
True. Always.
Exactly. I mean, that's true.
I think that's with everything,
yeah,
though.
Yeah, that's it. You know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Some things are more targeted.
Haters going to hate, Michael.
All day.
Yeah. 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 Some will hate, as you say. So talk a little bit about the show, times, where they need to come,
sure,
if they want more information. Let's put that out.
Sure. So let me just say, Oklahoma Contemporary, currently our main location is at the fairgrounds, the state fairgrounds, 3000 General Pershing Boulevard. You can go to our website, oklahomacontemporary.org, to find out more information about everything that we do. If you want to take a class with us, we have all kinds of youth and adult educational programs. We present exhibitions, performances. We got a lot of stuff coming up in the fall and the spring. So just get that on your radar if it's not already. Mm-hmm. And then I think for a lot of your listeners, this show might have a lot of personal interest or impact. And one great way to engage with it is to come on through next Saturday at the fairgrounds for the Hip Hop Jam, where we're going to tie everything together. We got workshops. You can learn to do hand-style graffiti.
Mm-hmm.
You can learn breaking DJing. Styles. You can learn DJing. And then you're going to see expert examples of all those things
from
master artists. So break it down for us, Angel. What can we expect next Saturday?
So I'm going to give that hype man jump down on it, all right?
Okay.
All right, so Saturday, November 4th, what you can expect coming in, first of all, we will have a free graffiti workshop taught by Germ, a very pronounced...
Germ.
Yes, very pronounced, well-known writer here in Oklahoma and around the world. But, yeah, we have a free workshop early in. We do have paid workshops, but for $10, you're going to get a chance to study with Quality and Pandora, who do a lot of Cirque du Soleil training, as well as most of the step-up movies that you've seen. They did a lot of the training and teaching for that. So that's involved with it. We have Drew Lunar, who runs Break Academy, has a complete science to the dance style of breaking and dancing. We have DJing by DJ Nemesis, who will be out there teaching. And we also have MC by DJ Nemesis.
Shout out.
Oh, man, Nemesis is...
Nem just killed it at the Rakim show a few weeks back.
Oh, man, Nem runs... Yeah, if you don't know who he is here in the state of Oklahoma,
Look him up.
DJ Nemesis, 405. So we have DJ Nemesis teaching on those workshops. We're going to have a two-on-two break battle with a $400 cash prize on that. We have Cypher Circle battles going on, all dance styles. Open up, come through on that. We're going to have a ton of MCs. I think we got 15 on the list of MCs coming in. So a full rundown of some of the dopest MCs, Josh Lee, Steph Simon, Odessa, tons of them, like all types of
open mic opportunities. Or is this something?
I'm sorry.
Okay.
I feel you. But no open mic opportunities on it just because of the time frame. We want to make sure everything's in there. Yeah. But we will also have a DJ showcase.
But if people want to break into spontaneous cyphers, I mean, we're not going to police that now.
On the serious, it's hip hop. So, like, if you over there in the corner and you and your homies are going down on it, man, I'm going to come over here and check your skis and see what's going on.
Yeah.
I mean, all of this, $10 admission, kids 10 and under get in free. $10 for the workshops. You got four awesome workshops that you'll be able to participate in. Workshops that would normally cost you $30, $40 for just one of them.
Yeah.
And you get access to all of them for $10. And you got a whole 10 hours of just all types of this hip hop going down.
Yeah.
Food trucks are going to be on scene. We have the interactive learning gallery, live graffiti showcase going on outside.
Mm-hmm.
Tons of all this is happening. Yeah. So
you can get tickets on our website at oklahomacontemporary.org. Mm-hmm. There will also be tickets available at the door.
Right.
Great.
And you can go online as well to bit.ly/NFS, NFS Jam.
Okay, great. Great. And let's try to make sure we can get this on the on our Facebook page.
Yes,
One
please.
Mike
cool.
Voice.
Yeah, thank you, Michael. That's great.
Send me some info. We'll get it put up there and get folks out and try to boost it like we can. Man, we're gonna have to come back to the road trip.
Right.
I don't even think we left Milwaukee. We kind of tipped in Chicago a little bit, but it's great to have Jeremiah here and Angel here, and you know, I mean, the work that you guys are doing, man, I just want to commend you on that. To continue to educate, right?
Yeah.
And press the boundaries of understanding for those on the outside. And I think it enriches them, right? I mean,
yeah.
you might not really want it, but once you get exposed to it, you understand how much it makes your life better. So anything in closing you want to say to our audience? And, you know, we have an international audience,
right.
So not just folks in Oklahoma listen to you.
So even if you speak another language, somebody may still understand.
Yeah.
Okay, from people in Turkey, merhaba. People in France, bonjour.
All right.
Let me just say thank you, first of all, for having me on the show, Michael.
Absolutely.
We have been talking about this for a while, and I appreciate the opportunity to talk a little bit about what we got going on. Let me just say, for those listening, you know, it's easy for those of you who are, and I lived in New York for 10 years, so I say this from someone who lived in that area, it's easy to see what happens in places like Oklahoma as flyover country. Arts and culture are not part of the activities there. People aren't interested in that. That's just not true, and I think what we're doing with the Ralph Ellison Foundation in Oklahoma City, what's happening with our institution, Oklahoma Contemporary, lots of great organizations throughout the city and the state who are really trying to speak up and provide voices to artists, to people who are interested in creating culture and positively contributing to society. That's what we're about, and we're going to see a sea change over the next 20 years. If you look at the demographic shift that's happening in
Absolutely.
Oklahoma, it's not going to be the same in 20 years as it is today. We have a lot of young people coming into the city, different racial demographics that are changing, a lot more diversity that's happening in the state, and we're just happy to be a part of that. So thanks again for the opportunity. For those who aren't in Oklahoma, check us out on the website. We got lots of content. We throw up
Sweet.
YouTube videos. And then props to Angel for putting everything together.
It's going to be
on and popping next Saturday. So
oh, yeah. Absolutely. Oh, yeah.
Come hang out with us.
Absolutely, yeah. Man. Thank you guys
thank
so,
you so
much.
Much.
We appreciate it, because as always, history will speak of us. Somewhere in the distant future, a scribe will reach down deep into the archives of our time. And what will she find? Will she discover that we overcame our differences? Will she find that out of many, we became one? Or will she find that we solved nothing and remain a divided peoples? Yes, history will speak of us.
We can make a difference if we try. We can beat the change that's in our lives. All we gotta do is work together. We gotta raise our children better. We gotta stop the hate, and spread the love.
One mic, one voice. You can change the world, it's your choice. One mic, one voice. You can change the world, it's your choice.
One mic,
one voice. You can change the world, it's your choice.
One
mic, one voice. You can change the world, it's your choice.
Your choice.
Today's broadcast is being brought to you by Blacken Studios. To learn more about Blacken Studios, please visit them at blackenstudios.com or visit them on their Facebook page, Blacken Studios. Today's broadcast is also being brought to you by Perry Publishing and Broadcasting. To learn more about Perry Publishing and Broadcasting, please visit their website at perrypublishingandbroadcasting.net. The opinions of the One Mic, One Voice show do not reflect the views of Blacken Studios or Perry Publishing and Broadcasting. Thank you for downloading the One Mic, One Voice show.